Welcome to The Bridge, a weekly magazine show featuring local and regional stories. I'm your host, Kathleen Morgain. High school teacher Brady Olson in Lacey, Washington, has been credited with stopping a potential school shooting.
It's very heroic. He put his own self at risk to ensure that no one got hurt.
Austin Jenkins unfolds the timeline of the events on Monday at North Thurston High School. Those stories and more just ahead. NPR News headlines are next. The time is 9:01. You're listening to The Bridge on Coast Community Radio. I'm Kathleen Morgain. An advanced placement government teacher is getting credit for stopping a shooting at North Thurston High School in Lacey, Washington. Police say the teacher tackled the shooter after he opened fire Monday morning just before classes began. No one was injured, but the shooting left students and parents in a state of shock. Olympia correspondent Austin Jenkins reports.
It happens every time. When there's a school shooting, parents rush to the school to reunite with their children. It was no different at North Thurston High School on Monday morning.
Here's the process.
A school staffer addressed anxious parents.
The main building is still in lockdown. Okay? It's clear. Everything's fine.
But the parents were told they might have to wait a while to be reunified. Rebecca McQueen, in tears, huddled with other moms. Her son is a sophomore at the school.
I'm just freaking out.
Other parents were frustrated. Some could see their children through the chain-link fence standing on the football field, but the gates were locked. Heidi Burton's son is a ninth grader.
I've driven around a whole city block, but I can't get my kid.
As parents waited, they texted with their teenagers, and the story of what happened inside the school began to emerge. Emily Statler says her daughter was in the school's commons area.
She heard the gunshot. She looked over. She saw him doing it and ran. That's all she can remember, really. She's kind of in shock.
As Statler spoke, a news helicopter circled overhead. Eventually, the stadium gates opened, and the reunification of stressed-out parents and terrified students began.
Okay, I need you to sign this, please. Thank you.
Parents signed their children out and left with them wrapped in hugs. Some stopped to tell their story. Liam Sedgwick heard the first shot.
And it sounded like maybe a table slamming.
Senior Jeremy Craig also heard the gunfire. It was near the gym.
It sounded like weights were dropping in the weight room.
Craig continued walking into the commons, and suddenly he was looking at the shooter dressed in black.
And he fired one round into the ceiling, and I just turned around and ran outside.
After that second shot, Liam Sedgwick says,
and everybody started running up the stairs screaming gunshots.
Sedgwick and his girlfriend escaped the school and hid in a nearby neighborhood. Moments after that second shot, teacher Brady Olson stepped in.
The teacher tackled the student.
Jim Mack is a commander with the Lacey Police Department. A reporter asked him how he would describe the teacher's actions.
It's very heroic. He put his own self at risk to ensure that no one got hurt.
In a statement, teacher Brady Olson says he reacted in a way that any other teacher would react at the sound of a gunshot, and that he had help from several others. The gunman is described as a 16-year-old who recently transferred to the school. Police say he brought the six-shot revolver to school from home and told them in an interview he had not intended to hurt anyone else. The school district says it had no indication the student might do something like this. Whatever his motive, student Kiana Larson says he definitely made a statement. She was in the commons when he came down the stairs and fired the second shot. She then tripped and fell, trying to escape.
I thought I was gonna die because I couldn't get up and all my friends were leaving. And I finally got up and I didn't even look back. I just started running.
Larson spoke as she left campus with her mom after being interviewed by police. North Thurston High was closed for the rest of the day while investigators worked and bomb-sniffing dogs made sure the building was clear. I'm Austin Jenkins in Olympia.
The Affordable Care Act has expanded coverage to more than 10 million Americans who were previously without health insurance and provided subsidies to millions more. But it hasn't changed much for those who have fallen behind in paying for health care. Reporter Rowan Moore-Garrity has more on the lingering problem of medical debt.
At the Yakima County Courthouse, presiding District Court Judge Kevin Roy walks past a rattling dot matrix printer and long rows of color-coded folders to a shelf of files awaiting his signature.
So if I was to pull this file out, let's see, Memorial Physicians PLLC, that's not just by luck.
Judge Roy says most of these files are for medical debt. He spends a big chunk of his workday signing judgments against people who owe money to hospitals and medical providers.
No, it's like the tide coming in every week.
Medical debt affects one of every four Americans and accounts for more than half of all bankruptcies. At age 60, Scott Clyatt says he's in debt for the first time in his life. Clyatt got free health coverage through Obamacare for the first time since he lost his accounting job during the recession. But he's still struggling to pay off debt from an emergency room visit before he got Obamacare. When he missed a $25 installment after making monthly payments on time for more than 2 years, Clyatt wound up in court.
The judge did allow me to speak, but the fact that I admitted that I do owe them money kind of cut everything else off.
For the past 5 years, chronic pancreatitis has regularly sent Clyatt to the hospital for a week at a time, with a tab in the tens of thousands of dollars. When he was uninsured, most of this was forgiven by the local hospital's charity care program. But since Clyatt's health keeps him from working consistently, he's barely made a dent paying off the remainder, things like a $4,000 ambulance ride.
Divide $4,000 by $25,
Overall, gaps in coverage like Clyatt's are the exception to the rule. The vast majority of people with medical debt have insurance the whole time those costs are piling up. But the bills insurance doesn't cover can be devastating on their own. That's one reason Steffi Woolhandler says health insurance is often a defective product.
People buy it in good faith to try to get medical care and make sure their bills are paid. And then when they get an extensive or prolonged illness, the health insurance doesn't work.
Woolhandler teaches health policy at City University of New York. She says Obamacare has definitely helped, but underinsurance, when a policy has high out-of-pocket costs, is still far too common. Karen Politz co-authored a recent study on medical debt for the Kaiser Family Foundation.
We see a lot of plans still that have $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 deductibles, and that's still way more than most Americans have on hand.
In those circumstances, Pollitt says an illness is often the beginning of a cascade of financial problems.
We saw people take money out of their savings for retirement or for college, which then made other costs unaffordable, put the medical bills on a credit card, which then amplified the debt because all of a sudden they were owing, 25% interest.
In Scott Clyatt's case, medical debt has added to the problem of being too sick to work. After burning through his savings, he sold off tools and his motorhome to get by. Clyatt says the collections agency recently told him it plans to put a lien on his home.
I have a hard time with this in that I've always paid my bills. Bankruptcy is that wall that I just don't want to hit yet. I don't know that it's going to be avoidable.
It's a predicament Clyatt shares with millions of others. As he puts it, I feel like I'm losing everything I worked for 45 years. In Yakima, I'm Rowan Moore-Garrity.
You know the beautiful mass-produced tomatoes you can buy at the grocery store. You can drop one and it will bounce back unharmed, but it doesn't taste like much. Now in greenhouses, small farms, and research plots across the Pacific Northwest, there's a flavor renaissance afoot. Correspondent Tom Bonsi reports conventional breeding is being used to create tastier and more colorful vegetables.
Restaurant chef Andrew Mace takes inventory in the walk-in cooler long before the first guests show up in the snug dining room of Le Pigeon in Portland.
Leeks. Parsnips, leeks, yeah. Turnips, first-of-the-year asparagus.
Mace says diners should notice a transition from winter to spring vegetables this month. Longer term, he's hoping for another transition to vegetables that taste better. take the eggplant.
You know, how cool would it be if they could selectively breed that eggplant skin to be thinner or to be more edible or not as chewy or, you know, something like that.
Mace works in a high-end restaurant, but he says everybody wants the same thing by the time it's on their plate.
Something that's not compromised for storability or shape or disease resistance. It's all about the flavor, and it's a more pure flavor.
That's what he asked plant breeders for, and he may get more of what he's after this year. That's because more than 100 Northwest breeders, farmers, chefs, and seed growers are collaborating on more flavorful vegetable varieties, some with more vitamins, too. Oregon State University plant breeder Jim Myers says this isn't some miracle of genetic engineering.
What I do is conventional breeding, or traditional breeding, if you will. There's plenty of genetic variation out there for us to work with.
Myers' lab in Corvallis cross-pollinates related plants with desired traits. The plan is to select the best of the results for commercialization. OSU has already released trademark tomato varieties with names such as Indigo Rose and Indigo Cherry Drops. Those deep purple fruits contain higher levels of nutrition. Myers says his next release may be a mild habanero pepper. He gathers his team together in the warm greenhouse for a taste test of multicolored pickled peppers.
They're all good.
I'll take an in-between color here, and we're just going to eat them straight. Mmm. Very tasty. There is a little bit of kick, but it's not overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
My mouth's not burning. It has, you know, kind of a little bit of smokiness almost.
It's much more floral,
yeah,
of a flavor than your regular roasted red pepper.
Yeah.
About 2 years ago, a research coordinator with Myers started the Culinary Breeding Network to connect breeders around the region with consumers, such as chefs. The network's director says the aim is to create the heirloom plants of tomorrow. Another phrase tossed around is designer vegetables. An Idaho Statesman columnist labeled some of it this year's garden fad. Nursery co-owner Alice Doyle says the Pacific Northwest is a hotbed of what she calls artisan vegetable breeding.
There are artisan breeders and seed companies that have sprung up all over the place.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
Doyle runs the wholesale nursery Loghouse Plants near Cottage Grove, Oregon.
This is Bill and Travis.
Hi, Bill.
They're planting.
Planting is in full swing in the company's greenhouses, in part using some of the novel regionally tailored seed varieties developed recently. Wrap your head around starts like mint vanilla quinoa and lacinato rainbow kale.
Its main thrust is the focus on taste.
Doyle says some of the new vegetable varieties with dialed up flavor and nutrition are available in seed catalogs and independent garden centers now. Others like special parsley's, Asian greens, and that mild habanero pepper are still being refined. I'm Tom Bonsi reporting.
You're listening to The Bridge here on Coast Community Radio, 91.9 KMUN Astoria and 89.5 KTCB Tillamook. I'm Kathleen Morgain. Still ahead, area experts on adolescent development and sexuality will conduct workshops in Clatsop County with educators and parents next month. Meredith Payton is one of the coordinators for the Mind and Body Health Conference.
This conference is really for Clatsop County by Clatsop County. We're not replacing the recently canceled conference in Seaside, but we are filling that void.
We'll hear from conference organizers Meredith Payton and Chris Wright. That story coming up right after this weather break. Here's the National Weather Service forecast for the Lower Columbia Coastal Region. Patchy fog this morning, then cloudy. Partly cloudy later today with high temperatures in the high 50s. Light winds becoming northwest 10 to 15 miles per hour this afternoon. Tonight, partly cloudy early this evening. Cloudy overnight with overnight lows in the mid-40s. Gordon McCraw, meteorologist and director of Tillamook Emergency Management, says tomorrow another weak disturbance moves across, increasing the clouds, but little else. The weekend looks like we'll see partly to mostly sunny days with highs in the high 50s, lows in the mid-40s. The long-range model suggests the next front will push in the clouds Monday night with an increasing chance of rain on Tuesday. Well, now we're going to move on to an event coming soon to Clatsop County. The Coalition for Youth is presenting the Mind and Body Conference. And this morning here we have Meredith Payton and Chris Wright. Mm-hmm. They are both helping to coordinate this event. And I understand this is entirely volunteer driven.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Could you tell us a little bit about the Mind and Health Conference and how it came to be?
This conference originated based on some data that we see throughout the county through the Oregon Healthy Teen Survey and the Oregon Student Wellness Survey. Some of the data around adolescent sexual behavior, sexual involvement, our numbers are a little bit higher than state averages. For us, that indicated the need to open a dialogue and have a wider conversation of how are we educating our youth about their own sexuality. That kind of involved to create this coalition and then involved creating this conference as well.
Now, I understand the conference is aimed at any person in the lives of youth who have a position of authority or of mentoring, and this conference is an aid to help adults speak with adolescents.
That's exactly right, yeah. We want to avoid inviting or encouraging too many youth to attend. The idea behind here is to educate the educators. So exactly, we're focusing on parents, school educators, counselors, people in professional fields, as well as people in the personal lives of teens.
Can you tell us about some or highlight some of the topics that are going to be covered?
Friday, we're going to have a panel of folks, a lot of local professionals, a lot of, concerned citizens. We've got Ron Brown from the DA's office, Liz Covey, who is a child therapist, and Tessa Scheller. She is a trans woman, but she's also on the board at the Clatsop Community College, so she kind of plays two roles there.
And then we've got two representatives from Columbia Memorial and then a representative from Providence. We are trying to find people that play leadership roles in not only the healthcare field, but also understanding some of the experiences that youth are having in Clatsop County. So we're trying to have a lot of different perspectives on this panel. And basically the point is to really analyze the status of youth in Clatsop County and what kind of services and information and education they're receiving, and how can we improve upon that to create a really inclusive, safe environment for kids to safely understand basically about their bodies and about their sexuality. That's kind of the goal with the panel.
Right, yeah. Creating a comfort in the discussion in the first place, because it's such a difficult topic, I think, for people to address. So we're really trying to create a sense of community around this topic and encourage people to feel more comfortable talking about sexuality and development.
Sexuality, of course, is intensely personal.
Exactly.
So it can be difficult for anyone
by
to
nature.
Talk about in
yeah.
any context. This does not mean that you're going to be influencing curriculum in schools or any particular organization's program. That is up to them individually mm-hmm. to determine, but you're solely offering a resource.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. We're not influencing curriculum, and we're not trying to start any kind of specific program. But I will say that throughout Oregon, it's Oregon state law that middle schools throughout Oregon have comprehensive sex ed. You can look up this law, you can find it pretty quick, and it's a pretty detailed outline of what kind of information we're legally required to let kids know about. There will be a workshop on that. It's really an educational base for people to understand what information is out there and how to move forward with it.
Could you be specific about some of the topics you will be covering?
On Friday, we'll have the panel, a Clatsop County panel, and then we'll have a keynote. Glenn Maiden is going to be our keynote speaker, and he's going to talk about the origins of sexual addiction, how to have conversations about sexuality, how to encourage positive conversations about sexuality. And then the next day, we'll have a number of different workshops. So the first workshop is going to be a representative from Providence and myself. And we're going to touch upon sex education within schools, the options, some different kind of curriculums, what they look like. We'll also touch on abstinence education and what that looks like. That'll be about an hour-long conversation of different curriculums and programs, but also the representative from Providence will talk about trends and conversations that healthcare provider has within the county.
And then following that is going to be a presentation from the Harbor, the Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Resource Center. And that's going to be Shaney Tudor, and she's going to be focusing on youth violence, dating violence, talking about some red flags, things to look out for, things to be aware of. Often abusive patterns start early on, and you can see them and catch them early. So she's going to be really focusing on that piece of it.
And then we'll have Romy Carver. She is a educational coordinator. She works in the school districts in Tillamook County, and she does a great curriculum focused on what we call media literacy. And what media literacy really looks like is helping kids understand how to be safe on social media, safe in the use of cell phones, understanding what's out there and what are youth experiencing and what kind of apps they're using, and really give parents and educators kind of an up-to-date look of, you know, this is the world, this is the cyber world that your youth lives in, and here's how to keep them safe.
Well, I'm sure most parents, like myself, I'm speaking for myself, are a little bit disconnected from what kids are doing online these days. And I think, you know, I'm even looking forward to that topic because I think there's a lot of information to glean off of that.
Trends can move very quickly.
So quickly. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. It really is. Yeah.
Do you want to mention the last workshop?
Yeah. We didn't actually get to the last one. And that one's going to be presented by GLSEN, I believe is the way it's pronounced. But GLSEN, it's an acronym, Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network, as well as PFLAG. They're going to talk about gender identity, sexual orientation, focusing on gaining an understanding of how to create a safe school climate. And we've come a long way in the GLBT community, and I think a lot of people are much more aware and knowledgeable than they were a number of years ago, but I still think there's some education that needs to happen. I know I've seen a lot of studies based around kids dealing with bullying at school, so that's definitely going to be a worthwhile topic as well.
Can participants sign up for only specific presentations?
Yes. Well, I mean, it's open and free to the public. Registration is encouraged, and that's more just for the sake of being able to fit everybody in the room. We're not really exactly sure how many people to expect this year. We're always hoping for a lot, but because, again, this is a grassroots effort, there's always potential for it not to be crazy busy. But we have a SurveyMonkey poll and registration form, so people can register there. They can also register at the event. We also have a Facebook page, so if you want to jump online and look up some more information about it, it would be on the Facebook page.
What would people look for if they're looking for the Facebook page?
They'll be looking for the event page, Adolescent Mind and Body Health Seminar. The flyer is available as well, so the flyer has the registration link on it, and we've sent emails to superintendents all throughout the county, so if you call your school, say, I've heard about this conference, they can give you that information. We're hoping to be able to get the flyer out across the county, but we do have a press release in the Daily Historian coming out that also has information on how to register for the conference. And I would encourage registration because it is first come, first serve. The entire thing is going to be held at Clatsop Community College, which is a great community space, but there is limited seating.
All right. And then is there anything else that you would like to add?
I actually have one more thing to add. So this conference is really for Clatsop County by Clatsop County. We're not replacing the recently canceled conference in Seaside, but we are filling that void. We're really hoping for this to be a community space. And to create that, we're also going to be live streaming the conference. So for those parents who might be hesitant to come forward and attend, we really still want to make this information available because it's important for everyone to hear this. In my background, I've done drug and alcohol education and prevention, and not everyone does drugs or alcohol, but everyone experiences sexuality. And that's why it's so important to give this education and this information, because it's a really important tool for parents and educators. I think we'll have more information on how to access that live stream on our press release and on our Facebook page.
It's going to be at the community college website, though. So if you don't get a chance to look that up, you know, you can be pretty sure that if you jump onto the community college website, you'll be able to find the live streaming there.
And that's Clatsop Community College.
That's right. Thank you.
Okay. Yep. Well, Meredith and Chris, thank you so much for coming in today.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Yeah.
Thank you.
That is all the time we have for today's show. The Bridge airs weekly, Thursday mornings at 9. If you joined us late, you can listen to a podcast from our website at coastradio.org. Just click the program box on the homepage. We welcome your comments. Call us at 503-325-0010 or email to news1, that's N-E-W-S, then the numeral 1, at KMUN.org. I'm Kathleen Morgane saying thank you for listening today, and listen in again next Thursday for the next edition of The Bridge. The Bridge is a production of Coast Community Radio.